inviting me and for putting together this exciting workshop. It's a lot of fun to listen to the various approaches. And today I decided to give a Blackboard talk because I don't feel like flashing too many transparencies in half an hour. I'll focus on some of the highlights. I'll skip many areas that we have worked on, including Lifshitz holography and naturalness and all kinds of other things. And we'll focus on mostly the connection to CDT and the talks that we heard earlier this week. Hopefully we are building some nice and interesting convergence of all these ideas. So those of you who were coming here under the assumption that I'm going to talk about the book by Dan Simmons called Phases of Gravity, I'm sorry to disappoint you. But it is one of the official references for this talk. So there is a book by, if you Google Phases of Gravity, you get this as your first hit, a book from 1989. So those of you who are here to read the book and not to listen to my talk, you can borrow this copy and just not waste your time listening to the physics side of the story. I should mention, since I'm mentioning references, my brilliant students who worked on this topic with me. So this project is mostly based on work with Kevin Grosvenor, who is my student at Berkeley now, and Charles Melby Thompson, who is now a postdoc at IPMU. And if by some miracle I have time to talk about some of our other recent work on naturalness in non-relativistic field theories, I doubt that that will happen within this half hour, but this is work also with Tom Griffin, who is finishing this year and moving to a postdoc at Imperial College, and Kevin and Ziki Yan. So it's really excellent to have brilliant students like those mentioned here to collaborate with. So when I say phases of gravity, what I mean by that is really phases of gravity with anisotropic scaling, to be more specific. And so these would be described by what some people refer to as Hotava-Lifshitz gravity. I'll call it HL for short. And I'll particularly try to highlight connections to CDTs. You've already heard about the phase structure that's being seen by Renate Jan and collaborators in 3+1 dimensions. But let me start with a simpler system to set up the story, which is the Lifshitz scalar. So Lifshitz scalars are the simplest examples of interesting multicritical systems. And by multicritical, I mean that there is one fixed point, or sometimes more, depending on how complicated the theory might be. This fixed point generically will have some anisotropic scaling. So let's start with an action in some number of dimensions. Let's be vague here. This is the spatial Laplacian squared, so I'm splitting space versus time. This is, strictly speaking, partial I along all spatial directions. And this is defining for us a fixed point with z equal to 2 and anisotropic scaling. It's a Gaussian fixed point, and it's a multicritical fixed point because once I start adding relevant terms, relevant as defined in the vicinity of this free field theory, I'll see that I can add all kinds of interesting things. I can add the remainder of the would-be relativistic kinetic terms with some coupling c squared, which may be positive or negative. I can add a mass term whose coupling, again, can be positive or negative. And for simplicity, let's regulate this by some pi to the fourth with lambda greater than zero, so we don't have to worry about the energy being bounded from below. So this is a theory defined by this Gaussian part and enjoying two relevant deformations, c squared and m squared. And as a result, it has a very interesting phase diagram. It has a phase diagram which exhibits this multicritical behavior, and I'll borrow a drawing which is typical in condensed matter. They plot two physical quantities. Typically, this is something like temperature and some other quantity. And when you tune both of them to a certain value, to the critical point, that's where you reach this free field theory. So that point is somewhere. And around this point, it turns out that there are not just two phases, as in a conventional scale field theory, but there are three phases. And the interesting feature is that in the mean field approximation, so classical level, mean field, all three lines of phase transition are tangent to each other. And there's a good explanation for that. What are these three phases? Well, first of all, here, phi is just zero, so this is a disordered phase. There is a uniformly ordered phase where phi takes a constant expectation value. And the novelty here is the modulated or striped phase, where phi develops an expectation value for which there is really no good analytic expression. So I'll just draw this wave which breaks translational symmetry along one of the spatial directions. And that's the novelty here compared to what you might be used to from conventional critical phenomena. Now, when you try to explain why these three lines are tangent to each other, it's useful to go from these two physically measurable quantities to the couplings that actually show up in the action. That's not what the experimentalist directly measures, but that's what the theorist considers. These are relevant couplings. So there is a classical, that's another interesting point, there's already a classical RG flow in this theory. So you can redraw this diagram. Instead of plotting what condensed matter people would plot, we can just as easily plot those two relevant deformations. And it just happens that the dimension of m squared in some natural units, maybe of spatial momenta, is two times the dimension of c squared. And it's this two which explains why phase transition lines, when you plot c squared versus m squared, have to be parabolas, at least in the classical approximation. So the phase structure is something like this. There's a phase transition line, and then there are two parabolas, because they are set by satisfying some kind of a relation between m squared and c squared, which has to respect the fact that their dimensions are an integer multiple of each other. So this is the general structure. Then this would be the modulated phase. C squared and m squared, probably something like c squared over here, m squared over here.
Question?
Yes.
Is this modulated phase looks like a pattern formation made in the reaction diffusion model?
This appears in such a huge body of literature that I can't even start commenting on this. I'm just mentioning it here as an example to list some of the highlights that I'll need for comparison to gravity. So quantum corrections, when you turn on quantum mechanics, what typically happens, you develop anomalous dimensions, and therefore this naive relation between the dimensions of the couplings goes away, and what typically happens is that these three phase transition lines meet in a generic point and they're no longer tangent to each other. Now, the next system I want to consider is CDTs, where we saw, and I'm just blindly quoting from the talks, we saw in the talks a very interesting phase diagram where the phases were labeled. This was C. I always forget which one is A and which one is B. Let's say this is B and this is A. This is the interesting one when, if you are in imaginary time, you see some kind of a spherical-like geometry, and there are these spikes, which might be lattice artifacts that serve you to attach the macroscopic cosmology to the boundary conditions. So this could be, in a good approximation, just a round sphere. And it is, of course, the result of the famous change in the rules of lattice triangulations of gravity, where you are only summing over triangulations that conform to a preferred foliation structure, like these. And that quantitative difference really allows you to, for the first time, take a continuum limit that seems to make sense as a macroscopic spacetime. This phase here, I think, is somewhat chaotic. I don't have a good drawing for it. This phase here looks like pancakes that pop up for a lattice amount of time now and then, unless I got them reversed.
But if you draw this as a beagle,
I don't have a better.
But you were drawing, there you were drawing a beagle.
And I'll get to a more precise understanding what these mean. These are just phenomenological observations at this point. And some of the points that I want to make is that we are talking about completing gravity by a hypothetical fixed point. And one of the reasons why we think that there is a good completion has to do with these CDT results. Whenever you propose a hypothetical new fixed point for some physical system, the best strategy you can have is to try to identify the best possible degrees of freedom, which ideally are as weakly coupled as possible at that fixed point or near that fixed point, and hope that classical mean field captures such that classical mean field approximation captures a lot of the important physics, and then you treat the rest by small perturbations. That's the ideal picture which you want to develop. So here the starting assumption might be that the correct degrees of freedom throughout the scale change in the system might be metric-like degrees of freedom. I don't object against that statement. You try to define the theory by a path integral, integrating over some measure, which is being modified due to the entropy factor here. And you might start by just weighing this in imaginary time by the Einstein-Hilbert discretized action. But I think that's one of my comments here. It's silly to assume that this is really something that has to do with the Einstein-Hilbert theory just because you stick the Einstein-Hilbert discretized action in the exponential. It's the entire integrand here, I, that defines the theory, and the split between what you call e to the action and what you call the measure is somewhat arbitrary and artificial. So what's the important thing here is that the action depends not just on the bare inverse Newton constant and a cosmological constant, which I think are called kappa 0, kappa 4, but also on another coupling constant. And I think this delta, never mind where it comes from, it deserves to be called a coupling constant because it plays an important role. Things depend on it just as much as they depend on kappa 0 and kappa 4. It would be artificial to separate delta and say it didn't come from the action since it just comes from the full dependence of the integrand on three couplings. So this is an important hint. The theory, in order to achieve this continuum limit that seems to make sense, requires already more couplings than just GR. If you don't include this delta, you get back to DTs and all the crumpled polymers and other branch polymer phases that are not interesting for quantum gravity. So that's an important point, I think. So now if I continue with my other physical observations about CDTs, so my next point is that we want to rephrase the theory now analytically. So what is the best analytic approach to such a system? We want to invent a description in terms of degrees of freedom that capture as much of that phase diagram already at the classical level. And they would definitely have to be classically described by an action that depends on more than just the Newton constant and the cosmological constant. So this is all based on universality in the sense of quantum field theory. Just like if you think of that as the analog of lattice QCD, what is the best proposal we have for some kind of a continuum Yang-Mills Lagrangian, which is supposedly deriving the same universality features, whereas critical exponents you can imagine measuring near fixed points and so on. And the idea is that long story short, I think it's this anisotropic quantum gravity, which seems to have all the features that are required. So the statement is that conjecturally, the best way of accessing this entire phase structure, and actually more, is to start with degrees of freedom, which are still metric fluctuations. But they have an anisotropic dispersion relation in principle. So identifying the right degrees of freedom is not just a question of what kind of species of particles you have, but it has to do with at least the dispersion relation at the Gaussian fixed point, or maybe saying that you are at a non-trivial fixed point with more complicated properties. Another comment I want to make here on the CDT side still is that there's this question of foliation dependence. And the question is, can we make the rules of CDT somewhat weaker and allow for imprecise foliations? It looks like you're almost forgetting that there is some kind of a foliation by going with a more restrictive set of microscopic triangulations. But this is just a microscopic kind of lattice construction. You have to be able to decide the important question here. If you are trying to prove or disprove that the resulting continuum theory depends or doesn't depend on the foliation, it's not sufficient to relax slightly the dependence on the foliation at the lattice level. You have to prove that in the continuum, the coarse graining may or may not produce an effective foliation at the coarse grained level. And I think generically, you do get, after coarse graining, a dependence on, again, a macroscopic foliation, just as there was one built in into that approach. So I think the dependence on the foliation is difficult to eliminate, which is yet another reason in favor of anisotropic gravity where we split space versus time. So now, since I'm only constrained to speak for half an hour, let's move on to the next topic, which is gravity with anisotropic scaling. And hopefully we'll see very quickly how in the mean field approximation, lots of the beautiful properties of that diagram are captured and new features are predicted. So we can start with the classical action. There's some kind of an overall coupling kappa squared in front of the whole thing, which I'll be mostly ignoring because I'll be mostly in the classical mean field limit. Then, of course, my fields are n of time. You could make it also a function of space-time, leading to the so-called non-projectable version. And while the non-projectable version might be important for other things like holographic renormalization in Lifshitz gravity for non-autistic field theories, for this purpose, it would be too complicated. We'll get a rich enough story already in the projectable version where we restrict the lapse to be only a function of time. So I'll be using the projectable version throughout. I might even relax this or make it more restrictive by saying that sometimes you can start with a theory where there was no lapse in the first place, and that seems to be even better aligned with the naive microscopic foliation structure because that step from one time to the next has no measure of lapse other than one, step by step. So you could say that might even be the better starting point. And then we have the metric. The spatial metric depends on time and space, and the shift vector depends on time and space. The action that I'll start with is the extrinsic curvature squared. And the square, as everybody in this room probably knows, can be performed in two different ways. Kij is 1 over 2n, the time derivative of the metric decorated by terms that make everything nicely gauge invariant. And this is the trace of that extrinsic curvature squared. And lambda is a separate new dimensionless coupling. And then you have a potential that depends on the metric and the covariant derivative, but not on its time derivatives. This is still very generic in arbitrary dimension, so we want to specialize to be comparing precisely that result from 3 plus 1. I should be studying this in 3 plus 1 dimensions. So before I go to 3 plus 1, let's talk about possible RG fixed points. Gaussian fixed points can be proposed and studied. The simplest case corresponds to the value of an isotropic scaling dynamical exponent z equal to d, and that makes the theory in principle power counting renormalizable in d spacetime, these spatial dimensions. So if we are in 3 plus 1 dimensions, this potential for any of these fixed points, the potential would start as v0, where v0 consists of terms, all possible terms with 2z derivatives, plus relevant deformations. So if we are in d equal to 3, v0 would already be very complicated. It would contain terms like some coupling, dimensional. Each of these hashtag marks are a separate coupling constant. I don't want to invent new names for them because I won't use them. There is a whole bunch of couplings already at the level of leading dimension operators. So this theory clearly will have a lot of room for lots of multi-critical behavior. There will be a fixed point parametrized by multiple couplings, and then you can start flowing in like 9 different dimensions and start turning on relevant deformations, which I haven't started listing even. So that story is certainly much more complex than what we are trying to capture here. So let's just focus on a special case, simpler case, where we are in 2 plus 1 dimensions. And in that case, the theory will be much simpler. Also, by the way, if I'm looking at the non-projectable version, I would have to start adding terms that are built from another ingredient, the spatial gradient of the lapse function, and that adds tons of other terms. So for simplicity, I'll consider the case of the 2 plus 1 dimensional theory. And we'll see that that already captures most of the qualitative behavior of that phase diagram that I mentioned up there. All right. So 2 plus 1 theory. And this is the important action where I want to start paying attention to specific couplings, because we'll be drawing specific phase diagrams and finding specific ground state solutions. So we still have that same kinetic term as before. But for the potential term, we simply have r squared with some coupling, which I'll call alpha over 2. We have the spatial part of the Ricci scalar with a coupling that I call beta. And you can kind of morally think of beta as being roughly 1 over g Newton in a certain sense, minus 2 times a constant. I'll call the constant E for vacuum energy. So this is vacuum energy. You can kind of think of it as 1 over g Newton times lambda, the cosmological constant. I'm trying to have the intuitive signs. Plus, the plus sign here is the conventional in GR, minus sign is the conventional minus 2 lambda that you would get in the conventional GR action. So this theory as it stands, a priori, has no prejudice about what kind of isotropic or anisotropic scaling should be built in. It has separate time scales and length scales. Only when an observer chooses to set some of these couplings equal to 1 to normalize how they perceive time versus space, is there some kind of a natural scaling that emerges? The observer's choice, there are two natural choices. A UV observer would say, I'm sitting at high energies, I'm defining the theory through this part of the action as a z equal to 2 theory of gravity, and I'm setting, therefore, alpha equal to 1 to set my units. If you do that, then beta is a dimensionful relevant deformation. So 1 over g Newton, this would be my contribution to the previous discussion. What is the role of g Newton? Here in this theory, it appears solely through the relevant deformation of the ultraviolet fixed point. And this plays the role of the cosmological constant, and even more relevant deformation. And around this choice, once you set alpha equal to 1, then essentially the dimension of time is 2 times the dimension of space. But an infrared observer might have a different prejudice. They say, I want to set the speed of gravity at low energies equal to 1. So I may be tempted to set beta equal to 1 as a choice of how I relate space versus time. In this case, you would get the dimension of time to be the dimension of space. Beta goes away, and 1 over kappa squared plays the role of the Newton constant, and E becomes just the vacuum cosmological constant lambda. 5 minutes?
If we have 10 minutes for questions.
Okay. In 2+1 dimensions, there's one scalar propagating graviton, one scalar polarization. So finally, phases. Since I have only 5 minutes left, or 15 if we postpone discussion to the actual discussion session. Phases. The interesting fact is that I can start with the FLRW cosmological ansatz, which is n equal to 1, shift vector vanishes, and the spatial metric is maximally symmetric given by some cosmological scale factor, which is usually called A squared, but I'll call it F times A, metric of constant curvature. Gamma is such that its curvature is K times gamma ij. And since I'm going to run out of time soon, I think I'll just start drawing things instead of writing equations. So last equation I want to write here is the actual Friedmann equation. If you plug things into the theory, you end up defining the ground state that is supposedly of the FLRW form has to satisfy this important Friedmann equation. It comes from just varying the action with respect to the Laplace function. So let me continue over here. These are just random comments which we don't need. Sorry? Yeah, that's fine. I know that there are many other ones, but I don't want to. It doesn't matter. That's fine. So start with real time. The real-time theory, we can also analytically continue to imaginary time. If we start with real-time, this means alpha is greater than 0, if you think about how this works out. I can explain later if this is confusing. And let's take 2 lambda minus 1 over 4, call it epsilon because it appears everywhere, so I want to save some writing time. Let's assume that this is greater than 0. So this would be in the GR regime where lambda is close to 1, for example. And I'll just draw the diagram. So now we have 2 relevant deformations, beta and E, the inverse Newton constant and the cosmological constant, effectively. And as it turns out, there are 3 different phases. There is one phase transition line that goes along constant E. And below here, the classical solution is a deformed sphere. The metric is described by a scale factor, which is given by a useful formula. Since this is for negative values of E, let me use the absolute value to make sure everything is properly real. So you see that this is not quite cosine squared of the Hubble constant times t. It's that shifted slightly by a constant. So that basically means that this is really like an American football-shaped deformed sphere. It does have actual conical singularities at the endpoints. I didn't define for you what h is. H is the Hubble constant, which happens to be given always by this expression, no matter in which phase you end up being. So it's some positive number. But this phase doesn't translate into the upper half. In the upper half, the phases that we get are, there's a desiderate-like phase here. And there's a phase where, so the solution, again, I could write, would contain a cosine hyperbolic in it. And then in this part, there is no time reversal invariant solution. Instead, you get two different, either expanding or contracting cosmologies with a big crunch or a big or a Big Bang singularity. And there is a classical RG flow that goes along parabolic surfaces. So you see there's a lot of similarity both with the Lipschitz scalar and with the CDT. The comparison to CDT becomes more pronounced when we go to the regime where epsilon is less than 1. And when epsilon is less than 1, which you can think of in two different ways, it's either the regime, so now epsilon is less than 1, but alpha is still positive. This either means that you've switched from lambda positive to lambda smaller than the conformal value being negative, which is the interesting regime which Jan was also mentioning. Or you can think of it as the result of the analytic continuation to imaginary time. And then the phase diagram becomes even more interesting. It has a real-time Desiter geometry, but again, deformed by a similar shift. So this is really... Sorry? Lambda? Less than 0. Thank you. Sorry. And here, you have two other phases. So again, this is E and beta. This phase is time modulated. It's a sphere that goes between forever between the smallest and the largest radius. And the most interesting phase happens here. There's actually kind of a corner here where there's a hyperbolic oscillating cosmology. But the most interesting observation is that there is a region which I would call FLRW forbidden region. There is no solution within my ansatz. There is no solution in this entire regime. So what is the ground state of the theory in that regime? That's an interesting mystery, which I would like to answer if I had more time. I can mention just briefly what our ideas are. But I would like to say that at least if you think of weak rotating back the CDT phase diagram to real time, this shows the geometry in imaginary time. There is a clear one-to-one parallel between the phases. This would be the standard Desiter-like phase. This is like a time-modulated phase. And the way out of this paradox that there is no solution in, under the FLRW maximally symmetric ansatz, we thought for a while that this would lead to some spatial modulation, that the ground state would be a sphere whose metric is not round. That can be analytically proven to not exist as a solution. So the conjecture is that this phase here is a phase where the lapse, you can call it a topological phase of lapse. I made an assumption that n in my FLRW ansatz is equal to 1 because I thought I could always attain that by a gauge transformation. And you can if n is non-zero. But if n is 0, then you can't. And if n is 0, then as it turns out, the geometry in that phase, the spatial metric, has to be static and has to satisfy some minimization conditions. So there's some kind of an order parameter, in other words. The order parameter has to do with the vacuum expectation value of the total energy, which in a conventional FLRW phase, which satisfies the Friedmann equation, would vanish. But here, there is no solution for which it vanishes. There are only geometries for which it develops a non-trivial vacuum expectation value. So to just conclude what I mean by a topological phase of lapse, it's a phase where if you are within the universe, the lapse is 0, and everything is forced to be static. So nothing ever happens in this universe. The interesting question is what happens when you look at this universe from the outside with the prejudice that you are measuring time lengths on the scales set by non-zero lapse. which is what the CDT people are doing, because they impose the condition that the lapse distance between one step and the next is one and not zero. In that case, you would see the entire history of the static, eternal, non-evolving universe collapse into just one pancake, and that's conjecturally, again, in nice matching with the results of the CDT. So long story short, I think we are developing more and more evidence for the fact that we are studying the same physical set of fixed points using different techniques. And of course, if you go back to the original complexity of the action in 3+1 dimensions, you have many, many more couplings, much more room in principle, which is a scary thought, because it's very challenging to do these heroic lattice calculations already with three couplings. Imagine trying to make the action of CDT depend on 17 couplings and play with the phase structure. But that structure is there in principle. Mathematically, it's available. And it will be interesting to pursue this further. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, this is a solution
No, there, it comes out just simply from assuming the Friedmann equation. It gives you the exact deformation. There's a unique solution. Sometimes there are two solutions. I was sketchy here. In some cases, you can prove that the FLRW ansatz gives only a single solution. Sometimes there are different solutions. For example, in this regime, there's also another solution which looks like a deformed sphere. And they could compete based on.
But there are no solutions that go, that leave a store.
Alpha, remember alpha is this parameter that an infrared observer.
Yeah. So there is an observer.
Exactly. If you take the low energy observer's point of view, that observer has the prejudice that alpha should be neglected because it's a higher derivative correction to Einstein-Hilbert. So if you send alpha goes to zero, that you are taking the infrared limit, this is just a sphere. So alpha is the deformation parameter. It comes simply from the anisotropic UV completion. So this is a UV completion by anisotropy between space and time, just like I was suggesting yesterday when I rudely interrupted Jan's talk, that if you take a phi to the fourth theory in four dimensions, it can be UV completed by itself without new degrees of freedom simply by making the theory anisotropic. So I would just write down the action for that, which is simple to, if you take Lifshitz scalar in 3+1 dimensions and have a mass lambda phi to the fourth, nobody forces you to include this part of the action, simply because if you do the dimensional analysis, this doesn't get generated by quantum corrections. There are no divergences of this term in the theory, so this is a super renormalizable theory. Phi in 3+1 dimensions is of dimension 1/2 in momentum units. So this term would be of dimension 3, but this term is only of dimension 2. So quantum loops from this vertex never create this counter term. This is only generated as a classical finite calculable correction. So you have a theory here. You turn on this by a small amount. You can make this of order epsilon, this of order epsilon, this of order epsilon, and that's a technically natural construction. The theory is super renormalizable, therefore free in the UV, and in the infrared gives you the usual running of lambda in the relativistic theory to zero. So it's a flow between two Gaussian fixed points with a crossover, and I don't see anything wrong with the theory as a UV complete theory of the scalar. So for gravity, we are basically, just like Jan was using the scalar phi to the fourth as an example of what we are trying to pull off in the gravitational setting, I think this is exactly the model example of what we are trying to do and presumably achieving in these phase diagrams. So anisotropic scaling, and if you flow out, you get closer to conventional z equal to 1, and you reproduce the De Sitter-like geometry for the low energy observer.
Of course, this is 3D. We don't see these things really in 3D. So the claims
Well, if you repeat it in 4D, then you have many more couplings. And the challenge would be to find out, my conjecture is that your phase diagram is a slice of a much higher dimensional phase diagram. The question is, which way is it oriented in the space of all these couplings? And in 2 plus 1, it's less couplings, so presumably. And we did some partial work with Joshua and Steve Carlip's group in Davis trying to figure out, because this is really all the couplings that you need for the renormalizable projectable theory. So if you want to, you should be able to see the same number of couplings in the CDT approach, and I think they are there. The results are not as complete as your results in the slightly simpler setting. But we have at least one more coupling. One should be plotting lambda also as an extra dimension.
I think Lee is the first one.
Yeah, so I'm going to make a wild conjecture and you react to it.
Okay.
If you look at your phase diagram and take yourself to a second order critical point, then you should see some conformal events. In the wild conjecture, that you see not just global conformal invariants, but global conformal invariants, and you recover shape dynamics, and through that, recover Lorentz invariants.
That conjecture is not as wild as you advertised it to be. I think that's certainly in the realm of possibilities. That's something we have thought about even before shape dynamics, in fact, that you can try to reconstruct out of conformal invariants of anisotropic field theories, which you should get in some form, at least scale invariants. But local, that's a separate, it's technically more confusing than it sounds. But I think since out of SO3, if you enhance it to SO3,1 as a conformal extension of the spatial rotational symmetry, then that's at least formally your Lorentz group. So trying to match it onto the conventional representations of the Lorentz group on the Hilbert space, that's an interesting conjecture. I would like to be able to turn it into an example which actually works.
I would be
sympathetic with the idea. I mean, the idea seems interesting, but at this point I'm agnostic whether or not it works like that. Because these Lifshitz theories don't have as much conformal symmetry at the fixed points as we are used to from relativistic
models. I think we should shelve the questions until the discussion session. Yeah, but we'll be sending that out.